Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And welcome to the Following On podcast from TalkSport. I'm John Norman, and alongside Jared Kimber, bringing you immediate reaction to the action every time England's cricketers play. And today's show proving we're here to give immediate reaction to the non-action as well. Rain winning all three sessions today, meaning West Indies still hold out hope of earning the draw that will leave them the series. So what are we going to talk about? Well, come inside and find out. You're listening to Following On. So you know by now that it rained a lot in Manchester and everywhere else. Then it stopped. There was some blue sky. Everybody got a little bit excited. The covers were nudged. The super soppers were out. Then it rained again. Then it stopped. Then the umpires said they'd have a pitch inspection at 3. Then it rained again. And the umpires decided to stay indoors and have a nice cup of tea. And then we were all put out of our misery, meaning Jared and I could help the wives with the kids. And that's about it. Or is it? No, because it's time for a couple of rants from Jared, a few topics that he would like to discuss with me and you, the listener. Jared and baby, where do we start?
Jared and baby. I thought it might be worth talking about what England are trying to create, because I don't think it's talked about enough. We talk about individual selections. So every time Stuart Broad is dropped, there's an outcry, or there's a bunch of people going, "Wow, you know, he's not the bowler he used to be," or whatever there is. Everyone's got a side and everyone's quite upset. But there is a reason that England are doing what they are doing, John. This is not an accident. It's not that they think Stuart Broad has suddenly become rubbish. It's because what they're trying to do is create a bowling attack that wins as many matches around the world as possible. And by that, they don't want a bowling attack. They want a platoon of bowlers available to them.
As you've often said, Jared, variety is the spice of life. And that's the same with the bowling attack. I guess that's what you're trying to say. Is that correct?
Yeah. Instead of thinking, so most cricket teams in the world go, these are your best four bowlers, or five bowlers if you've got an all-rounder. And we're going to play them over and over and over and over again on loop until one of them gets injured. And then we'll go out. And then what started to happen was Australia did a lot of sports science on fast bowling, and they started to say, there must be a better way of doing this. Surely you don't need fast bowls all the time. Also, I think we realize that out and out fast bowlers don't always work in England, for instance, and swing bowlers don't always work in Australia, and you know, different kinds of bowlers perform differently in different conditions. So we started to bring that into our thinking. We started to look at resting. I think what England are trying to do, especially with their fast men, and I do mean the actual fast men. So that's Jofra, that's Wood, I was going to say Ollie Rayner. Do I mean Ollie Rayner? Ollie Stone.
Yeah.
Ollie Rayner's an off spinner from Middlesex, isn't he? Too many Ollies. There's a lot of Ollies in English cricket. Have we ever discussed
that? Popular name.
That's for the second half of the episode, anyway. So essentially, I think they originally started with that idea, which is, if we know we have three proper fast bowlers, we don't need to play Wood two tests in a row. We don't need to play Ollie Rayner all the time. What we can do is rotate through the three or four of them if they're lucky enough to be able to do that. And I think now
you just said Ollie Rayner again.
God, why do I keep saying Ollie Rayner? Does Ollie Rayner even still play? Was he playing for Middlesex? Are you at
I
the game?
I don't know.
Aren't you at the Middlesex?
Let me just check. I am, but no, he hasn't played in this game.
Okay.
I think he might have retired.
I think he moved to a different team and retired. And,
hey, I'm going to surf the net and find out whilst you're making this point.
So the point is that I think that was their original thought. A bit like what baseball pitchers do is if you have a lot of guys who can bowl very fast, instead of taxing them by making them do a lot of work, if they can each do a little bit of work, they'll all remain at that pace and they'll end up being very good bowlers. And I think they've then taken that to another degree because cricket is a lot different than baseball in that most baseball pitchers are good no matter what the conditions are like. Whereas in cricket, the conditions dictate because of the pitch. So I think
the ball doesn't bounce in baseball.
Yeah, exactly.
Massive difference.
So there are little differences in baseball parks, but they're a massive difference. You know, Guyana and the Wacker, it's almost two different sports in those two different pitches, right? So I think then England started to go, well, we can rest Jimmy Anderson perhaps from Asia, especially, you know, at times, especially perhaps from smaller series in Asia. Stuart Broad, we already know he's actually quite a good road bowler. Do we have to use him as much at home? Should we use Wokes at home and get him used to playing well in England so he can take over from Anderson's position? All these sorts of things, I think, started to come into their mindset. And that's what they're trying to do is this sort of, they don't want to have a bowling attack. They want to have a bowling squad of about 7-8 people. And it's not just seamers either. My guess is that Jack Leach and Don Best might also do similar things. Don Best will come in when they want someone who can bat a little bit more, depending on what happens with Moe and Ellie. Jack Leach will come in on a pitch that really favours spin bowling or occasionally against lineups of right-handers when everything's in his favour. That's what they're trying to do. Now, that's going to bang up against what everyone in cricket has always said, which is you always pick your best team. No matter what, in all situations, you pick your best 11 players. But that's really not what cricket has ever done that much anyway. I don't know if you know this, but I think the most times that the same 11 has ever played together is 11 times, and that's the West Indies. So no 11 players has ever represented their country more than 11 times altogether. So we actually change teams quite a lot, and I think England are looking towards that kind of style. And if you even look beyond the bowling, remember that England did this with wicketkeepers. They literally picked a specialist Asian wicketkeeper in Ben Folkes to come in when Bairstow was injured over Butler, who has now ended up becoming the number one choice wicketkeeper. So I think England, who are very inspired by baseball and have been for a very long time, and Moneyball, are really looking at this as a way of doing things. So it'll be really interesting to see them going forward with this.
Batsmen as well. I mean, we've seen Australia try it with batsmen when they've toured Asia, haven't they? Or all-rounders. We've seen I used to love watching the squad announcements every time, you know, after the great team. You saw some left-field picks there. Peter George, didn't he bowl? He bowled for Australia. Who's that? Trent Copeland?
Oh, you're not even mentioning the two main ones. Cameron White as a leg spinner, Moses Enriquez as a batsman.
Hang on, give me a chance, you know. You do understand the how communication and speaking works. You have to say, well, you are unique, I suppose. You can't just say four names in one go. You have to say them in something called order. But yeah, Moises Enriquez, I would have forgotten Cameron White in fairness. But yeah, so, you know, that's always good fun. I mean, otherwise we probably would never have seen Glenn Maxwell play for Australia. But also England, you know, Keaton Jennings, he was down to open the batting in Sri Lanka. That was what they were going to do. And also, I mean, they made a change, didn't they, a couple of years ago? Is it Mo Babat, the performance director or performance coach? You know, he is essentially taken, who is it, Ollie Stone, Craig Overton, one other, not Ollie Rayner, who did retire, by the way, a couple of months ago. But essentially, they've taken them away from the counties. They've said that they're not going to be playing it for England, but they're basically getting them up to speed so that when it comes to the Ashes at the end of next year or whatever tour, they're going to be ready to play. The point you make about Don Best and Jack Leach, I think the important thing from that is, and I was having this conversation yesterday here at the Oval with Mark Church, I think. I can't remember. Anyway, it was with somebody. Now, Don Best, we've spoken a lot about him. He's what, 22? 23, and we all know that spinners really come to their peak a lot later than that, unless they're absolute freaks. Now, what is important to me, in the same way that, you know, Ben Folkes essentially Actually, it was Lizzie Ammon, that's who I was speaking to. In the same way that Ben Foulkes could essentially, now that Butler scored that 50, he could essentially sit back and be carrying drinks for the rest of the summer and play no Red Bull cricket. Okay, and then we come to India at the end of the year, if that tour happens, and he, or Sri Lanka, and he may be put back into the side, having not played Red Bull cricket in 12 months. Mm. Now, with the spinners and someone like Don Best, I think that England, again, need to be really clever, and I'm sure they will be. I'm sure they're thinking about this. But Don Best, I would say, next year against India, they've got to be really careful. So they've got five tests against India, who know a little thing or two about bowling spin. Now, what do you do? Do you say to Don Best, right, you're going to play two tests. And outside of that two tests, you're not going to be part of the squad. Essentially, you're going to go back to Somerset and you are going to play cricket. Because that guy needs to play cricket. So Jack Leach will come in for him or possibly Moeen Ali. But essentially, they've got to manage the situation. So he's playing cricket. And so when he's required, possibly in the Ashes at the end of next year or further on in 5 years' time, he's got enough cricket under his belt. So it's an all-round approach, I suppose. It's obvious that you need to rotate bowler, fast bowlers, but you also need to make sure they're playing cricket when they're not playing for England.
Yeah, and that's the other tricky bit is, so England have got themselves into a bit of a mindset recently that county cricket doesn't produce test cricketers, right? And to be fair, that's kind of always been the case. There are good skills that you can learn in county cricket, but if you are on the grind, you know, I remember talking to Australian players back in the day, they were like, it's very hard to get yourself up. So everyone's playing at like 85% rather than 100%. You forget the game so quickly because they play so much more than everyone else. So there are obvious drawbacks to that. But you look at Don Best. Don Best has not played enough first-class cricket. He has not been the number one spinner for a team enough to understand what being a number one spinner is. He has not played in, when I looked, I think I did something for the Cricketer magazine where it's not that he's got a bad record, it's that he has barely got a record. So you have to get him out there. So it doesn't matter if it's him, Craig Overton, Keaton Jennings, you need those guys to be consistently playing. Now, if it's not county cricket, then it needs to be the Lions or it needs to be, they need to be put into, overseas leagues to learn new skills and all these sorts of things. But that's the tricky bit with all this is how cold can you come in? You only have to look at the NBA. So the NBA is one of the most, and the football was another similar one with the Premier League and, the champions and all those sorts of things. Because the NBA in those leagues actually have to come back with their players ready to perform at the end of the season. All right. So for the NBA, that's a final season. That's a huge thing to come back. And you're seeing that's what all the panic is. And yet in cricket, we're pulling a lot of these guys out. As you said, Ben Foulkes is a really good example of it. We're pulling him out of cricket as much as possible and he'll be in the bubble. And Ben Foulkes, I think, has spent more time in an England squad not playing than any international cricketer I think I can ever think of. The only one that would come close would be Jeet Patel.
Sam Billings.
Well, Sam Billings is a good one too. Jeet Patel was incredible. I think Jeet Patel was 12th man for more tests than Dan Vittori actually played by the end. Jeet Patel was on every tour and just never got a gig, which now we realize was a huge mistake because he turned out was an incredibly talented player. But it doesn't happen that much. And Ben Foulkes, I remember when Ben Foulkes was sort of, I think he was like second choice keeper at Essex. He still spent most of his time with the England team back then. He wasn't even, so he has spent so much time. What he doesn't do is spend enough time playing cricket. And the last couple of years, I think he started to bring that back up. But he's talked about that as well. He went to Sri Lanka, didn't he, to train himself?
Last year he did play a lot of cricket for Surrey because he wasn't being selected by England. So
it's not just selected, though. That's what I mean. In these cases,
he wasn't in the squad.
Yeah,
it was Bairstow and Butler, wasn't it?
Yeah, but some of the times I'm talking about him, he wasn't in the squad. He was quite often training with England when he wasn't in any squad. I think there's a lot of great skill work that you can learn, but this is fundamentally a game of decision making. So while you can upskill yourself, and a lot of what England are trying to do is basically it's taking it back to what Australia did with the original academy and making it more modern and more sports sciencey, right? But there is a certain point where you have to be able to put all those things into a game. So Joe Denley is a perfect example of, I think Joe Denley has most of the skills that he actually needs to survive at test cricket. What he probably didn't have was enough playing at the top level with those skills to be able to get them. Now, if you go back to county cricket or if you don't play at all, I think that's a bigger problem than going off with Lions tours and playing one Lions tour in South Africa and playing another Lions tour in New Zealand and the next one in Bangladesh. And wherever you go, you can continue to develop your game in a better way. I think England have to be quite mindful of that, of, you know, suddenly Jack, you know, I still think that Jack Leach could have come in for either of these two tests, probably the second test, because of how many right-handers the West Indies had, and they had Curran and Wokes available to them at that stage. But how cold would he have been? How well would that have worked? And that's something that we have to start factoring in. So the platoon idea does work, but it's a completely different sport to baseball, where when you're platooning a baseball pitcher, he might literally throw 20 pitches. That is not what you have to do if you're Jack Leach and you have to come into a test match. That's not what Ben Foulkes is going to have to do. And we have to think about all of those different things and how we prepare people better. And I'm not saying England are not doing that, but that all comes together with these huge sort of squad packages that these teams are looking at.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I remember 2009 World Cup, T20 World Cup. I was here at the Oval and England were playing West Indies. I can't remember the batsman, but James Foster was the wicketkeeper. And he pulled off an outrageous stumping that no batsman wicketkeeper would have managed.
Off Napier even, down the leg side?
No, it was West Indies. It was
no, off Graham Napier down the leg side. Didn't he do a great
one? Oh, sorry. Possibly.
Actually, maybe it wasn't. Yeah. I'm not sure they used Napier as a bowler, did they?
But I don't think they did.
He did an incredible leg side stumping. I remember that during that tournament.
Yeah, and I remember watching that and thinking, wow, that is proof that a wicketkeeper is worth his place in the side, because that wicket wouldn't have been taken. You know, wicketkeepers, if they can't bat in T20 cricket, I mean, not that I was thinking this at the time, they can come in at 11 if they need to. And then, of course, he probably played two or three more games and that was it. He never really featured for England again. You know, wicketkeeping is a topic of discussion again after what we've seen from Shane Dowrich and also Jos Buttler, and generally around the world. I mean, how many wicketkeeper first internationals are there? Tim Payne? And was he even picked because he was such a great wicketkeeper by the end, by the point he came back in? His great days as a wicketkeeper seem to have been about 10 years ago.
Yeah, Ridhiman Saha is the one for me, and he probably is the best wicketkeeper in the world at the moment. And I think there are certainly better wicketkeeper batsmen available to India, but Saha is so good that I think they go with him. But yeah, there aren't many other first choice wicketkeepers. I mean, I always go back to Michael Bates, the Hampshire player, who is one of the best wicketkeepers I've ever seen.
You do mention Michael Bates a lot and have done consistently. Not as much as you mentioned Benny Howes, but you know he's up there. Just one point though, Rishabh Pant has got the nods way more times than Ridhiman Saha in the last few years, isn't he? So even India are going against Saha.
Yeah, I mean, Saha was... I thought he was my last hope to sort of see a specialist wicketkeeper. Not that he can't bat, because he certainly has batting skills, but he's not the batsman that Pant is, obviously. But it's hard. I mean, look at Jos Buttler. I mean, there is a completely different timeline where, well, Bairstow was picked as a wicketkeeper ahead of him. Folks was picked as a wicketkeeper ahead of him. Craig Kiesewetter was picked as a wicketkeeper ahead of him. I mean, he's what, fourth, fifth choice wicketkeeper? An incredible situation to see him as the lead wicketkeeper in his country. And look at Australia sort of rotating through all their wicketkeepers. It's quite tough. And the skill level, and it's different for you and I because we are of an age. You can remember James Foster in 2009. When you talk to younger cricket fans and you bring this up, they think you're making it up. They don't understand how different wicketkeeping was in the 90s and the skills involved in wicket. I mean, when Ian Healy started, they used to say he wasn't a good wicketkeeper. He would be by far the best wicketkeeper in the world now, but by a considerable distance. And that's how much the skills of wicketkeeping has changed. And, you know, we talk a lot about Gilchrist, but Geoffrey Dujon and Alex Stewart were very early examples of more athletic batsmen who could keep, and now that's what everyone is. And you know, you see the thing that Cricviz put up where they say Butler had only dropped one, hadn't dropped any catches coming into the Southampton test. He'd only kept in seven matches, and he'd been kept away from Asia as a wicketkeeper because they didn't think he could keep. That's where we are with modern wicketkeeping. Stand back and dive.
Adam Gilchrist, we talk about him all the time, or people talk about him all the time. How good a wicketkeeper was he? Because nobody ever mentions it. When you consider who he was standing up behind the wicket to, and the different bowlers he faced, how good was, and the fact he was booed to the crease in his first test.
He certainly wasn't as good as Saha, but he would certainly be one of the best wicketkeepers in the world right now, purely on glove work. I don't think there's any doubt there. He was... Also, we talk about him a lot. He was also one of the first tall wicketkeepers. He's not massively tall, Gilly, but he's 6'2". I think he actually showed the first time we sort of went for the more athletic people rather than the short, stodgy people that wicketkeeping had been before. But he kept up the stumps to Shane Warne pretty well. But if you remember, Shane Warne spent his entire career badmouthing Gilchrist wicketkeeping. Looking back on it, that just seems like such a ridiculous thing. It wasn't even... I'm not even sure Warne was always the toughest person that he kept to. Do you remember Colin Miller, the Australian off-spinner, who was a medium pacer who bowled off-spin as well? He bowled really fast off-spin and zipped it around a little bit, and he had an incredible arm ball. I thought Gilchrist did a really good job to both of them, but there were probably four wicketkeepers in Shield cricket at that time who were better than Gilchrist. There are probably no wicketkeepers in Shield cricket right at the moment that are better than Gilchrist. That's how much that's changed.
Well, as things go, I think listeners who are following on podcasts might be wishing that there were more rain delays and washouts, because this may be more interesting than what we normally talk about. One subject that did come up yesterday, I believe Brendan Nash was the last white West Indian cricketer international. He played for Kent, of course, a bit of a go-slow merchant. But Joshua De Silva, wicketkeeper, came on and fell over yesterday, day two, from Trinidad. But the question was, what was his ethnicity? I had a quick look on Cricket Info, couldn't work it out. I probably should have Wikipedia'd him. I didn't. It didn't bother me that much. Have you got any idea?
Yeah, I think he's Portuguese, Trinidadian, I suppose, is the right one. I don't know how far his generations go back. I mean, Brendan Nash is an interesting one, especially as we are two fathers of mixed-race children ourselves. Brendan Nash is actually not a white man. He's got mixed heritage. His father was a black Jamaican. It just happened to be that he came out quite fair-skinned. And when you're standing next to a lot of guys with really dark skin and you're quite light-skinned, I think there was something obvious there. I don't know about De Silva's ethnic makeup as well, coming from Trinidad. But I think it's startling to us because of how many dark-coloured skin West Indians we just sort of, that's automatically. I don't know about you. When I was young, I didn't even realise that so many of them were Indian origin. I didn't realise how many West Indians weren't black. I mean, I suppose I grew up in the Curtly, Ritchie, Viv Richards sort of era. And, you know, it wasn't really until Chandrapal became a thing and I started thinking about his name, and then occasionally you'd hear stuff about his, you know, remember that in the 90s, everyone talked about Asian wrists all the time, and you'd hear that about Chandrapal. Mind you, Brian Lara had just the exact same kind of wrists, but he wasn't Asian, so they weren't mentioned as much. But it's a very interesting ethnical mix in the West Indies, obviously, with right across the board. Sonny Ramadan, the Kalacharans, there's a lot of Indian origin cricketers. And then you go back. So I always thought, I don't know how much you've ever looked into this, but you know, you hear this a lot in cricket, that West Indies used to have white captains. And I always thought as a youngster, that meant that they had like Mike Brearley type captains. Do you know what I mean? Like
yeah, guys, yeah.
who weren't very good, who happened to be white. But you go back and you have a look at some of these players. Like the one off the top of my head is Jerry Alexander. Jerry Alexander was one of the best wicketkeeper batsmen in cricket history up until the point that he. I mean, I think I'm getting him right. He made a, might have made a double century. Might have been one of the first wicketkeepers to make a double century as well. They weren't duds. They're white players. It just happened to be that over time, obviously, that you know, they were sort of swooped on, and you know, other cricketers, and they've had a lot of mixed race cricketers who probably had darker skin complexions, so we didn't notice them in a way that we noticed Brendan Nash. Quite a wide selection because it is. I mean, from Guyana through to what's the most northern island? I'm trying to think off the top of my head. It's Antigua.
Yeah, possibly Antigua. Yeah.
Yeah, ethnically, historically, the people who've gone there. I mean, you and I have been to Barbados a lot, and I'm always shocked at how many white people live in Barbados and have Bayesian accents and consider themselves, you know, Bayesian, which of course they should. I'm not saying that they shouldn't.
No, it's just interesting. The first time I went to Trinidad, I was really surprised or interested. You know, that I think the ethnic makeup of Trinidad is split almost as close to 50-50. Well, apart from Joshua De Silva, it makes for quite an attractive melting pot, to be honest with you. But yeah, it's, you know, the links between cricket and colonialism, where every time you visit any country, you can see the impact, I suppose, on dating back 100, 200, 300 years. You know, when we were in Sri Lanka, you learn about I learned more about the Tamils, what their history is, i.e. they were essentially taken from India to work in the tea plantations, or rather the women, the Tamil women were.
Tamils, yeah. And then other Tamils are not from there as well, which is even crazier.
Yeah, exactly. When there's movement of people, forced movement of people, funnily enough, there's problems 50 years, 100 years down the line. But the same with the Caribbean, all the different islands with all the different ethnic makeups. I found it very interesting when my wife, who's a Kiwi, when she moved to the UK, she didn't really have much of a inbuilt knowledge of the Caribbean because it's not as important in New Zealand. Because, of course, you know, the Windrush generation didn't get into a boat and go to New Zealand. They came to England. And the colonial links between our country and the Caribbean, those islands. But then if you go to France, then their links are to places like, I don't know, Martinique, I guess, or St. Lucia or places like that. So it's really fascinating.
All that sort of stuff, yeah, I find really interesting. When I did the history of Test cricket, so my wife is Malay Sri Lankan, which is a small group of Sri Lankans, but a few of them have gone on to play for the Sri Lankan national team. When you do the history of South Africa, there's been Malay South African cricketers. Now, I've never heard anyone talk about this sort of stuff before, and it wouldn't surprise me if there are Malay West Indians who have played as well. So you do realise that, you know, this empire, you know, and the way that it works through cricket, but you're almost exactly the same as your wife. Outside of cricket and probably Bob Marley, I knew and Cool Runnings, I knew absolutely nothing about West Indies as a country just because of where I was. And I wouldn't have known about it realistically without cricket. So cricket's allowed me to understand all these sorts of things. And even like recently, as you know, I've been looking into the history of the Cool Runnings movie, the true story behind it, finding out so much about the Jamaican, well, I should say the West Indies armed forces and how that has brought the West Indies together. It's such an interesting thing. And isn't it great that we got to learn that while a man kept wicket in a floppy hat, which he shouldn't have been allowed to do, and missed the stumping.
Brendan Nash as well, going back to him before we finish up, I think his dad won an Olympic gold in swimming.
No, he went to the Olympics. So he definitely didn't win a gold.
Oh, well, you know, nearly there.
Yeah. He's a Jamaican athlete who went to the Olympics, so you probably expect him to win a gold.
Yeah, absolutely. Son of Paul Nash, the Jamaican Olympic swimmer who competed at the 1968 Olympics. Hey, listeners to the Following On podcast, aren't you glad you stuck around to hear that?
Somehow we've managed to do a proper rain delay podcast while I hold my daughter in my arms and you're at the Oval. It's crazy.
Mate, we're going to play this out during a rain delay in Mumbai or something. This is going to be part of our India tour coverage. Right, well, as we know, no play on day four, but hopefully there'll be play. Although, say that, the weather forecast isn't great for day five either. But hey, it'll only take about half an hour to take the last eight wickets. Jared, thank you, matey. I'll let you get back to your daughter and look forward to meeting her in the flesh. For listeners to the following podcast, I can actually see Jared as I'm speaking. You might not be able to see us, but we're recording this over Zoom. Please do join us. At the end of day five, it won't be a following on podcast. Jared and Steve Harmison will be together 6 till 7 on TalkSport 2 Cricket Collective, looking back at the series. Unless, of course, we're still playing, in which case they will be commenting on the action and then referring back to the series, whatever happens. It will be bundled up and produced as a podcast, so you'll be able to get it wherever you got this, on Acast, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. But thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/sports ad free. That's Amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.